My Indian Life is back for season 3.
There are more stories ahead which need attention.
Bringing you more compelling stories from India's young people as they navigate life in the 21st century.
We young people are being impacted by climate crisis. We cannot let the elders to decide our fate.
That's Kalki Presents My Indian Life from the BBC World Service. Find out more at the end of this podcast.
Welcome to The Inquiry. I'm David Baker. Each week, four expert witnesses, one question and an answer. Here we are. That's just what I'm looking for. Nice. And delivery first thing tomorrow morning. Cool. Put in that detail, click pay. And done. Looking forward to getting it through the door. For many people, in fact, there are more than 2 billion of us, online shopping has become so normal, we don't often think about what happens behind the scenes. But once we click Pay Now, an incredibly well-oiled series of actions goes into motion. First up, in a warehouse somewhere nearby, a person called a picker receives a message on a handheld device that tells them to go and find the thing we've ordered and where it's stored. It's then scanned, packed and dispatched, moving from depot to depot, until finally a courier drops it off at our door. What makes this operation so slick is that all of these actions, and the people doing them, are managed by artificial intelligence, or AI. So in this edition of The Inquiry, we're asking, will AI like this spread out of warehouses and supply chains and into all of our workplaces? And in the end, will computers put managers out of work?
Part 1. It's happening already.
We've made a number of experimental systems to see how far we could push digital management.
This is Devin Fidler. He's the founder of an American technology company called Rethinkery. He's building software that already manages people.
So some of our software will, for example, automate knowledge work by going out, hiring people from freelance platforms, guiding them through a project all the way through to completion. So the idea is, can we create self-driving management systems?
So I have to ask, can we? How's it going?
We can to a greater degree than I would have guessed. It's more possible than I would have imagined, and it's becoming easier every day.
So tell us more. How does it work?
We have a software that will go out onto freelancing platforms. There are these platforms where you can connect with freelance workers around the world. For each role in the process of, you know, kind of putting a research study together, it will search the possible contributors, the people who might be good fit to work on the project. It will independently reach out to them, ask if they might be interested. It will give them usually a little job to start with to see if it seems to be a good match. And then if they come on board and they join the team, it will orchestrate the whole team to help them produce a final output.
It certainly sounds like a manager in action.
And we've discovered in the end that it is possible to build a self-driving research project. You can just hit run, walk away, and the computer can orchestrate the process all the way to a final product.
My goodness, this sounds extraordinary. Are we seeing the end of the human manager then?
I think we're seeing the redefinition of the human manager. So as the role of management sort of is increasingly taken over by AI, the parts that people still do are redefined to be management. So if you think of a manager in the Uber system, they may be overseeing, you know, kind of software that's managing thousands of people, and it would have been impossible for a human manager 20 years ago.
Devin says AI will do more and more of what managers have historically done.
The AI tools really are, you know, kind of very adept at a number of things that those white collar workers have traditionally been charged with. So I think white collar work a generation from now looks very different than it does today.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because the very people that might introduce this automation are the people threatened by it. You know, it's usually managers who say, do we go in this direction or that direction in terms of technology? Do you think there might be a bit of a human pushback on going in that direction?
There's always a pushback from the implementation of automation, and that's probably a good thing, right? Automation is a political process, and it needs to be handled at the societal level.
Andy says, in some ways, it's a good thing that it's managers' jobs that are threatened by all this technology.
Because it really puts everyone in the same boat, right? If there's pressure to automate frontline workers, then it can sometimes be a decision that managers take without too much pause, let's say. But if it is their roles that are also in scope for this, I think that gives an incentive for us to think about how should we handle this so that it produces the best outcomes for the most people.
But there also could be some bad outcomes of all of this. For many of us, management by computers conjures up images of stony-faced robots turning us all into cogs in the machine. But actually, says Devin, algorithms may turn out to have better emotional antennae than we think.
Algorithms that are able to communicate things with people in ways that seem compassionate or that communicate with people in ways that are as smooth as possible, given the emotional state that the person is in, are possible. There's something that are being developed today.
I don't know about you, but there's something about these algorithms that seem to be compassionate that feels a bit creepy. But the truth is that computers that manage are here, and they're here to stay. So the big question is, what do we do to make sure they make life better for people, rather than bring about some sort of sci-fi dystopia?
So I think deploying these wisely will be a big trick. It's very easy to create a system that tries to maximize one thing. Let's say profit making is the easiest one. The system doesn't know the social context it's working in. It doesn't know when it's doing something that's helpful or when it's doing something that creates a lot more problems. So they can be quite mercenary. If you have a particularly, let's say, greedy investment organization using an AI, they could use it in ways that have a lot of downsides.
Part two, what are managers for?
Well, the old line about what managers do is they plan, incent, and otherwise organize the way work gets handled.
This is Rita McGrath.
Well, I would say the digital revolution has really shown up in how we manage.
She's professor of management at Columbia Business School in New York. And she says the way we manage things anyway is changing.
What I'm getting at is what I'll call more of a permissionless organization structure.
That means a more informal structure in which teams are pretty much left to their own devices.
Where you're pushing authority and responsibility to make decisions as close to the edges of the organization as you possibly can. And you're using data and technology to make the process of work much more transparent and much more visible so that everybody knows what's going on. So you don't need a manager to do that work anymore.
And she says, technology allows a single human manager to manage many more people than they could before. Something called span of control.
And the traditional notion of span of control was you could only have so many people reporting to you because there was such a communicative and supervisory burden placed on the leader in that case. And so about 7 people was considered the optimal span of control. And if you had many more than that, you were going to be overwhelmed. They weren't going to get the support that they needed, and the whole thing would just kind of collapse of its own weight. Well, what we're seeing today is that's simply not the case in these organizations that are working in a more lean or agile way, that you could have 20 people, 30 people. If you could tap into a computer system and know what they were doing, you don't actually have to supervise them in the traditional sense.
One business that has taken advantage of the increased span of control that computers offer is UPS, the international delivery company.
So the UPS drivers don't use conventional mobile phones. They use bespoke devices that were created for UPS that have particular functionality built into them. But they use those devices to record every step along the journey of getting a package from where it's coming from to where it's going.
Sure, I can see that working on the ground. But what about in the boardroom? Could computers manage a company's strategy, say?
No. No, to me, strategy is still one of those areas where human ingenuity, the ability to see what does not yet exist, which computers are not very good at, still is the essential heart of it. Strategy is really about having imagination about the future of your organization and where you want it to go.
Even if they can't do strategy, computers are definitely doing a lot of the organizing side of management. And one big issue this throws up is, what happens if you have, well, a computer boss who's just not nice to work for? Where's the accountability? Who do you complain to?
Well, we're seeing that already, right? I mean, on the streets of London or wherever, there are these algorithms that are dictating where the food delivery guys go. And so that's already happening. And there's already been a huge amount of public discourse about who should be accountable. So some of these drivers, they have to accept a job before they know where they're supposed to be going. They have to accept a job before they know what they'll get paid for it. The algorithm is saying, okay, we need 20 people at this particular location at this particular time. Take it or leave it. I think that kind of takes us into the dark side of when we cede so much control to the machines.
And what about you yourself? Would you like to be managed by a computer?
I don't think so, because again, my work, the work that I do that I love doing, is really thinking about the future and using the imagination of what could be.
Part 3. You can't take your AI out for a drink after work.
I'm curious about the idea of AI and people.
This is Amy Steen.
This is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, and I'm very techie.
She's been working in human resources for 30 years. She's showing me her new app.
And so what it does is I wake up in the morning and it sends me a quite a chirpy little message saying, Amy, are you ready to get 1% better today? Which is a bit cheesy, but actually I quite enjoy it, quite like it. And I say, yep, I'm ready. And then I go in and I get my tip.
So you've got the app here. Show me what it is. How does this work?
It gives you a quiz, basically saying what matters to you. And then it gives you a profile. These are your underlying values that it's trying to tease out for you. It assigns you a personality type. Mine is both adaptable and collaborative. And then it's saying these are your strengths.
Oh, yeah. No, we've got this on the screen here. You can scroll through. So there's your profile. There's your strengths.
Yeah. What my growth opportunities are. So
okay. Do you mind if I read one of those?
No, that's
staying,
okay.
A growth opportunity is staying laser focused on the goals ahead.
And it says, you know, are you ready to learn something new?
Okay.
And I can pick a tip. And then it will give you a cookie at the end, which again,
might
make you crazy. Yeah, for doing it.
So this is your coach in your pocket, really.
Yeah, and you can tell it what you like and dislike, and then it will suggest things to you based on what you say that you like.
So the app is motivating you, it's suggesting things, it's, you know, waking you up in the morning, are you ready to start the day and everything? Could it become a manager to you?
There's ways that apps can help us augment our management practice, but I'm not sure I would ever want to be managed by an app.
Is there any way we would like AI to manage us?
If it's about a scheduler, yes, I think an AI robot could schedule me. And in fact, in some ways, it's quite nice to have a robot tell you where to go because you don't have to think. You know, they fill up your diary. You have an AI assistant managing your outlook for you. That's like a dream in a way because I don't have an assistant. It'd be great. I would mind a robo assistant. That would be great.
But Amy says, managers are much more than just schedulers.
But when you talk about managing, if you're talking about, you know, someone who's going to motivate me, someone who's going to appreciate me, someone who's going to kind of challenge me a bit and say, hey, you know what, are you really stretching enough on this? Could you do it differently? Are you being creative enough in your solution, you know, when you're thinking about how you're going to solve this problem? I'm not convinced AI is there yet for that. Those are very subtle and complex things that are maybe harder for the algorithm to do.
What's the challenge here? Is it just that we humans are so complicated that no computer could manage us? Or is it just a problem with the technology that we just need to solve the tech challenge?
I think it's that humans and computers, or humans and tech, do different things.
And don't we humans need to have a human connection?
My Fitbit tells me I've done 10,000 steps today. It sends me a dancing chicken. That's quite exciting. But it's much more exciting to have my boss call me and say, you know what, that thing that you did yesterday made a really huge difference for me. Thank you very much. You know, that means a lot more to me. And I think if you were only get recognition from the computer, it would feel inauthentic. It's still nice to get your ping. Yay, I reached my goal. But it's not the same as getting real high value appreciation from somebody. I don't think a compliment from the computer is ever going to feel as good as a compliment from another person. We shouldn't be scared of AI. I think AI is a fantastic tool for us to have in our toolkit. And one of the reasons we shouldn't be scared of it is if it understands the data better than us. But not all decisions should be data-driven decisions. Some decisions actually should be emotional decisions. The decision about whether or not you're going to fire that person who's been with the company for 40 years because they're no longer as productive as they were, maybe that's an emotional decision where you say, actually, we're loyal to our employees. And even though the performance is slipping, we're still going to keep this person because this is who we are and this is part of our value set. And there's other things that they're bringing to the table that aren't being measured by the algorithm. And people have lives outside of work. You know, people aren't cogs in the machine. They shouldn't be treated like cogs in the machine. So machine managing, fantastic for some stuff, but actually quite dangerous for other things.
Part 4. AI in the boardroom.
My name is Carl Benedict Frey, and I run the program on the future of work at Oxford Martin School, University of Oxford.
He's a leading expert on what's going to happen to employment and jobs in the future. So how close are we to having computers manage white-collar work?
I think we're quite far away from that, actually. And the reason is that algorithms are quite bad at complex social interaction. The ability to spot trends in the economy and in the world of work and react to those trends swiftly.
Carl was one of the first to warn that technology could soon move in on many jobs that right now are done by humans. He told me, for example, about a competition where people talked both to humans and to AI via chatbots. Their task was to correctly identify which was human and which was a computer.
Some people in the field argue that was a breakthrough a couple of years ago when one chatbot managed to convince 30% of human judges of it being a person. But it did so by pretending to be a 13-year-old Russian orphan boy speaking English as his second language with no understanding of English culture.
Like Amy Steen in Chapter 3, Carl sees management as much more sophisticated than just telling someone what to do.
If you think about the variety of much more complex in-person interactions that managers do on a daily basis, and managers get paid for, you know, building teams, inspiring people to do things that they would otherwise not be able to do, negotiating, you know, contracts with suppliers and customers. These are things that are very far off from being automatable today, and I suspect they're not going to be automatable within my lifetime.
But isn't that kind of just a sort of a human exceptionalism? We humans like to think we're very complicated in our thinking and our exchange of ideas and everything, but don't managers actually do something a bit more simple than that? Don't they really just tell people what to do, when and how?
I think it's certainly true that many tasks that managers do can be automated. And if we go back and look at the computer revolution, what we do see is that middle management has been squeezed for some time now. Because what automation technologies have done is, on the one hand, allowed us to automate a lot of things. And if you have fewer production workers, you need fewer managers to supervise them. And today, of course, in a digitized world, we can have computers doing some of that. You can have computers measuring your keystroke.
That's how fast you type. But rather more worryingly,
you can monitor exactly when you log into a computer, when you log off, what you do on the computer, who you communicate with. And you can even, you know, monitor your facial expressions through the webcam to see in what sort of mood you are in and how you react to different types of information. Those are things that are very hard to automate and are not likely to be automated anytime soon.
And even if they are, I'm not sure how many of us would want to be part of that future. But we may not have a choice. Computers are already well entrenched in work that humans used to do before. Every day, for example, billions of shares are bought and sold on the world's financial markets. And the vast majority of those trades are made by computers with no human input whatsoever. And many funds use computers to shape their investment strategies. So how soon will they be involved in all the other things human managers currently do?
Algorithms are very good at identifying investment strategies from the data that they are being given. And obviously you mentioned financial markets, which is probably the most digitized industry in the world, and therefore where algorithmic management is most advanced.
That use of computers looks set to continue growing, but there are limits.
If you look at the variety of management tasks that exist beyond that, you know, convincing investors to put their money into a particular fund, hiring the best people. Yes, algorithms can support with that, but you also need people to make sure that there is a fit with a broader team. All of these much more complex managerial tasks are far off from being automatable. And you know, the day that computers can potentially do that, we probably don't even need companies any longer.
A future world without companies? What would that be like? But back to our original question, will computers put managers out of work? For now, that feels a long way off. But computer managers are with us already, and they may even be developing at least the appearance of emotional intelligence. It doesn't look like those big minds at the top of companies will be threatened anytime soon. But if you're in middle management, and the bulk of your job is essentially telling people what to do and when, you might want to start thinking about a different career. The Inquiry was presented by me, David Baker. It was produced by Jim Frank, mixed by Neil Churchill, and the editor was Richard Varden.
Hi, I'm Kalki Kekla, and I am back for season 3 of My Indian Life, the podcast that brings you real-life stories from young people living all across this vast land.
So as a tribe, in our worldview, we are not mere part of nature, but we are nature.
Each week, we take a walk in our guests' shoes as they share their unique perspectives on living life in 21st century India. From the woman who works as a private investigator.
Who else would you go to? You can't follow the person yourself because you'll be very visible to the eye. You can't go to the police because police's work is not this. So it's us.
To the actress who has become a champion for body positivity.
How often do girls who look like me get offered lead roles? So that was my main thing. I thought I'm going to play this protagonist and I'm going to act the hell out of it.
That's Kalki Presents My Indian Life from the BBC World Service. Just search for My Indian Life wherever you found this podcast.